From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. Tonight, Utah will try to reverse the direction in which the NBA's Western Conference Finals have been going. The Jazz, off-key and not sufficiently improvisational to this point, will host the San Antonio Spurs, who lead that series 2-0. Tomorrow, the Cavaliers will face a similar challenge. The Pistons, less polite and, well, less cavalier, won the first 2 games of the Eastern Conference Finals in Detroit, and they will attempt to maintain the momentum in Cleveland. Only a Game's Karen Given, whose story about commuting to work by bicycle with David Watson ran in last week's program, has acquired a lot of new best friends. "Wow," wrote Phil Hammerslaw of Burlington, Vermont, "a full 10 minutes on bicycle commuting. The guided commute was unique and would be a great way to get more people commuting by bicycle. Thanks for making my Saturday morning. Now I have to get out for a ride." "Thank you, thank you, thank you," emailed Polly Henniger, who hears the program on WYPR in Baltimore. "I commute to work in downtown Baltimore and run into all the situations in your story. David Watson's descriptions of how to position yourself in traffic were right on, as was his statement about cyclists respecting motorists. I always find something to enjoy on your show, but this story was over the top." Diana Osborne, who hears Only a Game on Vermont Public Radio, was among those disturbed by my discussion of APA, the record-setting Sherpa, with Charlie Pierce in last week's program. "APA has reached the summit of Mount Everest 17 times. I love it that you go beyond the scores and into less commonly broadcast activities and athletes," Ms. Osborne wrote. "But jokes about APA wearing sandals and picking up trash get real. This is a professional mountaineer with a dedicated spirit and fitness level that should be envied the world over. Are you trying to perpetuate the stereotype that sportscasters are shallow and uninformed?" Finally, Alice Lisak, whose real name may be Emily Letella, and who hears the show on WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts, and WAMC in Albany, New York, emailed that she was surprised to hear us talking last week about the Cleveland Cavs, C-A-L-V-E-S. "After all," she wrote, "cows are not exactly fearsome or fast or graceful. In fact, calves are pretty gangly and trip over their own legs a lot." So it was a great relief to hear somewhere in the course of the conversation that the team is actually the Cleveland Cavaliers, or C-A-V-S, rather than C-A-L-V-E-S. Thanks for providing an entertaining program that makes my Saturday morning commute more enjoyable. You can write us with your kudos, complaints, or never minds at Only a Game, WBUR, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215. Our email address is onlyagame@wbur.bu.edu. You can reach us through our website, onlyagame.org, or leave a message on the listener line by calling 617-353-1860. One of the unexpected stories of this year's baseball season has the Milwaukee Brewers well atop the National League Central Division. The Brewers are winning with a mix of veterans and younger players who grew up in the game, and the roof of their new ballpark isn't even leaking as much as it used to. But will these delights save Milwaukee baseball fans from the usual mid-season deluge of pessimism? Wisconsin Public Radio's Chuck Quirnbach reports.
The Brewers haven't had a winning season since 1992, when future Hall of Famers Robin Yount and Paul Molitor were in Milwaukee uniforms. Only 5 years ago, the team lost more than 100 games. The new roof at Miller Park was leaking, and many wanted Bud Selig and family to sell the franchise. Well, in 2005, the Selig sellers got their wish. The roof doesn't leak as much, and the Brewers have excited a lot of people, including Telemundo baseball announcer Hector Molina. Some of the Brewers' early season stars include players with familiar baseball names. First baseman Prince Fielder not only pounds the ball hard during batting practice, he's among the league leaders in home runs. His father, Cecil, was a Tigers slugger in the 1990s. Fielder the younger insists he's not trying to outdo his dad.
No, I mean, I just want to win, you know. It has nothing to do with my dad, you know. It's just me, you know, my profession, and, you know, you want to be known as a winner, so, you know, it's always good to be on a winning team.
Brewers outfielder Tony Gwynn Jr. has been playing more of late and is batting over 300, just as his dad, Tony Gwynn, did for many years as a San Diego Padre. But the younger Gwynn says his father only played in two World Series.
I don't really think my dad's success has anything to do with it because, in all honesty, he only played for a couple winning teams in his 19 years. So, you know, I'm just blessed to have the opportunity to be a part of a winning team so far. Hopefully we can keep it going the rest of the year.
Some of the Brewers' older players also have a baseball lineage. Infielder Craig Counsell has helped Milwaukee's defense, the same way his glove helped the Florida Marlins win the World Series in 1997 and the Arizona Diamondbacks win the 2001 Fall Classic. After leaving Arizona last year, Counsell wanted to come back to Milwaukee. He's played here before and grew up here in the early 1980s when his dad was a front office employee and the Brewers were a consistent winner.
You know, you remember kind of how the city was back then and how excited everybody got, so to be able to hopefully be a part of that is, you know, it's a kind of a dream of yours for sure.
But family memories don't win games. Among other things, you need good pitching, and pitching depth was a question mark before the season began. So the Brewers spent millions of dollars to bring in starter Jeff Supan, who picked up a World Series ring last year with St. Louis. Supan is among the top winners in the league and says he's very happy with his choice of Milwaukee.
You know that you see it's a very talented team, but what struck me is that they're very hardworking and they're focused, and I think that's the key. That's what I like to see.
Another veteran leader almost wasn't with the Brewers this year. The club nearly dumped highly paid outfielder Jeff Jenkins, but he's batting close to 300 and last Sunday knocked in five runs to help the Brewers end a two-game losing streak. Jenkins tries to shrug off last winter's uncertainty.
You know, I think once we got to spring training, all that kind of went away, and it was time to get down to business and just playing baseball and get back to winning games. And, you know, it's been a great start to the season.
Earlier this decade, when the Brewers played terrible baseball, the fans still came out to see the new baseball park or the popular seventh-inning promotion involving racing sausages. Now they're here to see winning baseball and to buy Brewers souvenirs. Gwen White picked up some things for her young grandson during last Saturday's game.
I bought him a sausage, and I bought him a size 3 Brewer t-shirt. And he has a cheesehead hat and a Brewer baseball that talks.
White says she's excited about the team, too.
Because it'd be nice to have the Brewers take it all again.
Well, the Brewers have never taken it all, unless you count the 1982 American League pennant. Amid his Sunday noon tailgating, Steve Barr said his optimism has limits.
Well, it is guarded because I think all of us Wisconsin sports fans have, you know, we're scared.
A slump over the last 2 weeks has pushed the Brewers back closer to 500 and occasionally made manager Ned Yost tense. After one loss, he admitted to considering some lineup changes.
When it's ready, when I'm ready, when it's right, I'll look at it. I'm thinking about it. I'm not doing anything right now.
This season in Milwaukee, 25 years after the Brewers' only World Series appearance, and 50 years after the Braves became Milwaukee's only World Series champs, there's hope that Ned Yost and the 2007 Brewers will do whatever it takes to succeed. For Only a Game, I'm Chuck Quirnbach in Milwaukee.
Whether they put squirming live bait or meticulously hand-tied flies on the ends of their lines, anglers usually have one thing in common. They want to catch fish. But there's an angling club in the heart of San Francisco that boasts more than 500 members, yet has no fish on the premises, though it does offer a rich history and some of the best fly casting instructors in the country. Only a Game's Karen Given visited the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club, and she has our story.
Inside the Angler's Lodge, tucked away on the western end of Golden Gate Park and across the street from the buffalo paddock, a fire takes the chill out of a wet Saturday morning in April. Despite the rain, the lodge is bustling with men and a woman or two, many suited up in waders and carrying fishing rods. Mel Krieger is in the kitchen, fiddling with the sugar packets for his coffee.
I've been around a long time, you can tell from my age, yeah. And I teach fly fishing and fly casting here and all over the world.
Krieger is one of the club's celebrity members. You might recognize his name if you're the type to buy fly fishing books, videos, and DVDs, or if you've researched fly fishing clinics and international getaways. So if anyone's an expert on the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club's status in the world of fly fishing, it's Krieger.
There are a lot of places where they have clubs, but this is probably the best facility in the world. There are people that come to San Francisco because they want to come and visit this incredible facility built by the WPA under Roosevelt. Fortunately, the politicians of those days may have been fly fishermen also, you know.
A love of fly fishing is not listed in FDR's official biography, but in 1938, when the lodge and casting ponds were built, skilled workers needed jobs. Under the Work Project Administration, or the WPA, some of the finest craftsmen of the era worked on the lodge. A stained glass window of a brightly colored fly decorates the front door, and fish-shaped motifs grace the shutters and the floors. Behind the lodge, Club Vice President Bob Porter stares at the beautifully landscaped grounds and crystal-clear casting ponds, while dog walkers, runners, and mothers pushing strollers pick their way in between the practicing casters. The GGACC might be known around the world for its facilities, champion casters, and host of experts on everything from fly tying to fishing photography, but Porter says closer to home, the club is a bit less famous.
People hiking through all the time, and they just stop and go, wow. And people go for years without discovering this place. You know, they've hiked and run in Golden Gate Park, and have never quite stumbled on this place, you know, and go, whoa, what's going on here? This is fabulous.
It's Porter's job to encourage visitors to check out the sport, maybe even join the club. But like all exclusive sporting organizations, not all who drop by meet the entry requirements.
Red-tailed hawk.
Oh, wow. Beautiful.
Coming up and landing in this pine tree. That's gorgeous.
Well, okay. As long as you're human, you'll probably get in. And you can probably afford it, too.
It is not expensive. It's $30 a year. Anybody can join. Anybody, you don't even need to be a member to use the facilities here. People join because they then get involved in lots of activities here. We have fish outs going on all the time. We have competitive events happening here. We have classes in different elements of fly fishing, from knots to fly tying to entomology. So there's a lot going on here all the time.
Many of the club's activities date back to the late 1800s, when it was known as the San Francisco Fly Casting Club. They held their first casting competition in 1939, soon after the new facilities were dedicated. Since then, the club has hosted too many tournaments to count, even though the casting pools hold no actual fish. But Porter says in fly fishing, fish aren't necessary to hold a competition.
Well, in fact, in the world of fly casting, a lot of people don't like the idea of fishing competitions. There's something about the world of fly fishing is not about catching fish. It's about the sport of doing it and being out there and enjoying it.
Fly casters compete for accuracy and distance. In the accuracy competitions, casters try to place the fly inside two concentric rings that look almost like hula hoops suspended in the water. Both of the club's casting pools have areas set up to test accuracy, and many of the world's best casters practice here in Golden Gate Park.
The club has just historically dominated the whole world of fly casting. So literally we've had the world record for fly casting was set by somebody from this club in 1899. And in the last 50 years, we have pretty much dominated the world of fly casting competitions in the United States and internationally. We have one member who has been national champion 32 times.
Wow.
And world champion 16 times, and they only hold it every 2 years. And he's still doing it.
That member is Steve Rajeff, who holds the U.S. record for two-handed fly casting at 295 feet. Although everyone says these casting pools are among the best in the world, it's hard to figure out where Rajeff practices such casts. They're longer than the pools at the club. Doesn't all that noise scare away the fish?
No, the noise doesn't transmit into the water.
Inside the lodge, one member shows me how to wind new line onto a reel, while others get equipment out of their tall, skinny rod lockers and chat about everything fishing-related. Rual Hariko tests out the feel of a Japanese bamboo rod. Hariko is a bamboo rod manufacturer. He also ties his own flies and teaches others the things he's learned. Not bad for a guy who grew up down the street, but never picked up a fly rod until he was older.
I promised myself when I was a child, I used to live off of Cabrillo on 33rd. And one day I rode my bike around here and just watched a whole bunch of the fly fishermen and told myself one day I'll be able to come out here and do this. And finally I did, and a gentleman by Joe Lum took me under his wings. I was just making a whole bunch of noise out here, and Joe couldn't take it. He came down and he goes, "I can't take this anymore. Just go up to the club, sign the form, become a member, and I'll take you under my wings." And he just drilled me, and ever since I've just been hooked.
Yeah. Stop. 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 Very nice cast. Those are great casts. Well done.
As the San Francisco fog rolls in, Jean Cecil, her husband, and son are getting a casting lesson. Compared to the champion casters who've been practicing all morning, the Cecils look like rank amateurs. But they're not bad, given the fact that Jean's only held a fly rod once before, when she and her husband took a guide-led trip for salmon.
That was a great cast. You see that? It's rolling over nicely. It's going to present the leader and fly fish for
Wait till those little salmon see me.
Oh, they won't. They won't stand a chance. They'll shake in their boots at the sound of your name.
The Cecils came from San Jose today to try out the rod Gene got for Christmas. They're not members, and they don't know anyone here. But that didn't stop instructor Willie George from lending a helping hand.
He was over there earlier casting, and my son Ben and I were watching him, and I said, "I know just enough to know when I see a good cast." And then he put his things away and came over, and he's giving us a free lesson.
Wait, you mean this isn't prearranged?
Oh, no.
You're not paying?
No. No.
Willie George gives free casting lessons at the club on the second Saturday of every month. Today is not the second Saturday, but the fact that the lesson is free and spontaneous doesn't diminish the value.
We saw my improvement, you know. Stop, 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 stop. It's a hoot. He obviously loves his sport.
It might seem strange to spend a morning casting a line into water that has never and will never hold fish, but Bob Porter says practicing the sport without too many expectations can be a lesson well learned.
You can approach it from both the very intense aspect of fly fishing, to where you're going for catching fish moment to moment, or it can be the most relaxing experience going, being out on a beautiful river. The art of fly casting itself is wonderful and phenomenal and relaxing. And if you're not intent on catching fish that day, you can have a phenomenal time.
For Only a Game, I'm Karen Given in San Francisco.
Joining me now to discuss the week's news is Mr. NASCAR himself, the redoubtable Charles P. Pierce, Esquire. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Bill.
The Indy 500 takes place tomorrow, and I think the question on everybody's mind is the following. When will Marty Roth finally win the race?
I'm going to get into my Indy 500 mode right now, Bill. Nobody's really sure what's going on! Look, there are events about which I know a lot. There are events about which I know a little. The Indy 500 is a major event for not knowing anything at all. So I'm going to predict that Sam Hornish Jr. wins the race.
Excellent.
Although I hope A.J. Foyt the Fourth does, so people will have to say Foyt the Fourth a lot.
The NBA's conference finals stand at 2-0 in favor of the boring teams, or at least the teams that we know best. I think we're looking at a San Antonio-Detroit final. Am I being premature?
No, I think we are, too. I don't see Utah mustering up enough jump shots, to be perfectly honest with you, to make a series out of that. And the Cavaliers just aren't ready to play the way the Pistons insist on playing in the playoffs, which is to keep the score under 80 points. Now, as David Stern once again reaches for the bourbon bottle in NBA headquarters and realizes that he's going to have an Indiana State High School Championship score in all 7 games of the NBA Finals, we're going to wind up with a rather close but rather boring final series, I believe.
Charlie, speaking of NBA news, the outrage caused by Tuesday's draft lottery is just now dying down. What's the likelihood that the guy picked fifth in the draft will turn out to have the best career of anybody joining the league next season?
Well, I don't know who it's going to be, so I didn't know who the third pick in the draft was going to be, let alone the fifth pick in the draft. The Celtics and the Grizzlies, and to a lesser extent, the Milwaukee Bucks, had really terrible days in the lottery. You know, anybody who thinks the lottery is fixed, though, when you consider that they're sending the two top players to the Western time zone where no one will see them play for the first 3 or 4 years of their career, has got some arguing to do.
Just days after he implored Major League Baseball to apologize for the steroids controversy, Jason Giambi met with league reps after the New York Daily News reported that he had tested positive for amphetamines last year. Good timing.
Yeah, this is another example of why any union that agrees to random drug testing should take any promises of privacy with a grain of salt. This was pretty plainly thrown out there, at least from my conspiratorial view, by Major League Baseball to blunt his continuing dialogue about steroids. Peter Gammons, among other people, argued that perhaps the amphetamine story isn't true at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another example of drugs making people crazy.
In feel-better baseball news, the Chicago Cubs will be putting a statue of Ernie Banks outside of Wrigley Field before opening day of the 2008 season. How can it be that there isn't already a statue of Ernie Banks outside of Wrigley Field?
I was completely floored by this. I'm telling you, though, if they really want to honor Ernie Banks, they got to put up two.
I like it. Reversing the result of the 2005 Champions League
final, no!
AC Milan beat Liverpool 2-1 on Wednesday. I hope your few Bob were on AC Milan.
I had no Bob. I have no Bob, no Lira, no Deutschmarks or anything on this. I know that, even I know that their previous encounter for this trophy was one of the great either collapses or comebacks in the history
depending
of soccer,
depending on
whether you eat linguine or shepherd's pie. But if I may take a try at the name, Filippo Inzaghi made sure that would not happen again. And now, is this one of those soccer trophies that they will start competing for again immediately, like this week?
Very shortly.
Okay, very good.
Is it fair to say that Qatar will be taking no chances regarding fan support when their soccer team plays in the Asian Cup in Hanoi, Charlie?
Wait a minute. See, I'm really upset with the Qataris. Okay, so I went and I spent 10 days watching soccer there back in the 90s. I was a really good infidel. I spent a lot of money over there. And now they're paying people to watch soccer, and I'm not one of them? I mean, the primary occupation of every Qatari is hiring enough Filipinos to do the real work. Why can't they hire me to go to Hanoi and be a soccer fan? I can root.
I love it, and I love
watch.
The idea that...
away, 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 away. It's sand, all sand.
Could somebody check and see if hell is frozen over? Charlie Pierce just engaged in a soccer cheer.
Hey, for money, I'll do almost anything.
On the mascot front, PETA has urged LSU not to replace its recently deceased mascot with another live tiger. How do you think LSU will respond?
They will ignore it and go get another tiger. I wish they would do something better for Mike, though, than keep him in a cage where people can stand around. I mean, it is the last time I saw the previous Mike the Tiger, he was in a cage about the size of half of my garage, and it really did nothing pretty much but pace, and it can't be good for animals like that. Build a habitat for them. You've got enough rich alumni and college men from LSU, Bill. You know,
you come in dumb, go out dumb too, and boy, will we get letters.
Thank you, Randy Newman. Of them has made a lot of money. You have them build a real habitat for the tiger.
Whatever else you might think of the state of bicycle racing, it's not short on melodrama or intriguing characters. The most recent example of the latter is one Dr. Wolfram Meyer Augustin. His testimony in the Floyd Landis case cleared up what exactly?
Well, it cleared up the fact that scientists don't necessarily have to be boring. He's described in the AP Dispatch as a spike-haired, jeans-wearing expert with a pinky ring. Now, ordinarily, these type are, hanging around Monaco looking for princesses to deflower. But instead, this guy came in and decided that the doping procedures under which Floyd Landis have been penalized aren't worth the powder to blow them to hell. At the very least, this has been the least boring sports legal proceeding in the history of sports and law.
And finally, Charlie, is there any truth to the rumor that some of the members of the first-place Milwaukee Brewers are not only young, but... dun, dun, dun. Restless.
Yes, and somewhere in the baseball beyond, Harvey Keene reaches for the Galliano and mixes himself up another wall banger. Yes, your Milwaukee Brewers, your rampaging first place, I might add, Milwaukee Brewers, setting me up for the great karmic confrontation in my baseball soul in the World Series between Milwaukee and Boston, are going to appear on a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
And while they may in fact play most of their games on at the edge of night, they will be appearing on The Young and the Restless. And the idea that I know the name of two soap operas is sad enough.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine and joins me each week at this time on Dun Dun Dun. Only a game. Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show, and please visit our website, onlyagame.org.